So I don't want to brag or anything.
Okay.
But I'm on a Wordle streak right now.
Oh, I quit.
You quit?
I'm a
quitter. Yeah. You want to guess what my streak is right now?
Is it over 100?
It's over 200.
Okay.
I'm at today will be 224. I haven't finished today's puzzle yet, but today will be 224.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
Congratulations.
Thank you. I'm very excited about it.
I was like in the 160s, 170s, and then I just forgot to do it one day.
Oh, that's the worst.
And then I was like, I'm done.
I'm worried that I'm still going to be going in Alaska, and I'm like not going to be able to do it. Yeah. And like I'm going to lose it for the sake of the children. I'm like, oh, man.
Sure.
Are these kids worth my world streak?
In Denali, you might not have service at all. So, I mean, it might be.
I know. Like, yeah.
You can't even sneak away to Wordle.
Yeah, for sure. I would do it in front of the kids. That's fine. Yeah. This is important, all right? This is
sure.
Emergency pastoral ministry. This is not a problem. But yeah.
Yeah, look. Got a Wordle. All right, just got to do it.
I got to do it.
All right, well, congratulations on the streak.
Well, thank you. Yeah.
All right, welcome back to the Beyond Sunday podcast. We're exploring how to take our faith beyond Sunday morning. This is Patrick Nazaroff with me, as always, Pastor David Bowser.
Did you forget my name there for a minute? How you doing, Patrick?
It's a day, you know? and not Elise McCarter.
Yeah, she's off flying stuff.
Yeah, she's doing something. Checklists or check test or
check
something.
Check down, check the oil, check something.
Flying with some Czechoslovakians. No
That's
idea.
That's probably it. Smuggling in Czechoslovakians.
Smuggling in kolaches.
Yes. Yeah. You can buy them here. You don't even have to smuggle them.
Hey, it's the last test of the pilot. Okay.
Can you smuggle in Czechoslovakians?
Do you
prefer your kolaches with sausage or with like fruit and cream?
So I am a quarter Czech.
You're a quarter. You have a quarter Czech. You are a quarter Czech.
My grandfather is Czechoslovakian.
Okay,
so they will say
mm-hmm.
with sausage that is not a kolache.
Okay,
that is a pig in the blanket.
Okay,
with the fruit and cream that is a kolache.
Okay,
that's what that kolache means.
Okay,
so
if you if you say kolache, you mean fruit and cream.
That's typically what I would think. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, but you know nobody else says that. So you know I've said you know at Shipley's, I'll take a kolache, and
they
know what they mean. I know what I mean.
Yeah.
You know, like
I'll say in Ohio, if you say I want a kolache, everybody just looks at you because that's not a thing at all.
Okay,
we have Danish.
Okay, that's a Danish. Thing. Okay, sure. I got some Florida news.
Ooh, is this connected to the Florida Man games that we referenced a couple weeks ago?
Maybe.
Let's see. All right.
Ball of snakes.
Yikes.
Wildlife experts capture 500 pounds of Burmese pythons in Southwest Florida.
500 pounds? Burmese pythons get pretty big. That might not even be that many pythons.
You know, when I'm thinking of snakes, though, I don't want them measured by the pound.
That's a fair point. All right. That's legit.
Like, I'd like some snakes. How many hundreds of pounds of snake would you like?
I would like. Yeah. All right. That's reasonable. But they're all just like coiled together to try to stay warm. Is that what was happening?
Mating.
That's worse. Okay. Yeah. Well, I guess they were staying warm. That's.
Yeah, I don't know how that works. You know.
I don't know what happens.
Just get into a giant ball. That's how babies are made.
That's how snake babies are made. That's.
Yeah, maybe a stork comes and deliver the snake eggs. Yeah. First, you're going into a giant ball.
Yeah. When a mommy snake and 499 pounds of other snakes love each other very much.
This was 11 pythons, by the way.
11 pythons. That's a lot of pythons.
That's a good amount, yeah.
Yeah, that's more pythons than I want to meet.
So the Burmese python
mm-hmm.
in Florida is an invasive species.
It is.
Yes.
Because they're from Burma, not from Florida.
That's correct.
It is not the Florida python. That's
yeah, and in fact, Florida does host Python Challenge, which is an animal hunt to remove the Burmese python.
Nice. Yeah. Love it.
Yeah, because unfortunately...
They kill, like, all sorts of stuff.
Yeah, and they don't want them to breed in their giant ball of 11 snakes and 500 pounds.
Yeah. Nobody wants that. All
Nobody
right.
wants that, yeah. Here's an option, though. I got another from Popular Science. Scientists propose eating more python.
Oh, this is straight out of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom.
Yeah, he's eating a lot of stuff. Monkey brains...
But isn't Temple of Doom where they have like the whole snake on the table?
And they slice it and babies slither out.
Yeah.
And then they just like gobble them up.
Because they got that snake out of a 500 pound ball of Burmese pythons. And
it worked. their ritual. So, yeah. How do you feel about eating python?
I have had rattlesnake before.
I've had rattlesnake chili. It was fine.
Yeah. I had a rattlesnake like in a sausage.
Yeah.
Yeah. I would say so. I don't know that python would be that different from rattlesnake. I don't know. Maybe gamier.
Yeah. You know, they're suggesting, you know, that conventional livestock raising, you know, maybe not sustainable for the majority of the world, especially sure. with growing population. So,
are we suggesting raising these pythons?
Yes.
Okay, this seems more questionable.
Yeah. Well, how do you get them? You like, you know, like venison? Like, you're gonna go hunt for the python?
Well, that's what I was imagining. I was imagining Florida, you know, hunting for the pythons and then just eating it rather than just leaving their dead whatever in the Everglades.
Yeah. You know, they're not venomous. They reach lengths of 20 feet. But yeah. that group comes a lot of white meat that is high in protein.
There you go.
Yeah.
That's a very healthy option.
Yeah. So that...
it's the other white meat. It's the...
Yeah, snake. Burmese python. Burmese python, the other white meat. Yeah. So places over the world do eat python.
Yeah.
Indonesia, mm-hmm. Vietnam. You know, those are the two biggest in this article.
Sure.
And so, yeah, they're thinking, hey, we can... They don't take a lot. You know, they eat like animal byproducts, like, you know, what we would throw away.
Oh, okay.
They would eat that.
Okay.
And if they like don't want to eat, they don't really lose a lot of weight. Like they conserve their weight, you know.
Lazy snakes.
Lazy snakes. Yeah. So they're thinking like, hey, we can, you know, give them, you know, the garbage that we are throwing away.
Yeah.
And we get python white meat out of it.
Here's my problem. I don't have a problem with this like happening somewhere else. Yeah. I don't want that snake farm within 5,000 miles of me. I know. That's what I don't want.
Yes.
Because I have, you know, when I was a camp counselor, we had a license at our camp that we were allowed to catch and release snakes for up to 30 days. Mm-hmm. They are remarkably good at getting out of anything that you put them into.
Yes.
So yeah. I don't see any farm keeping these snakes in the farm. That is my fear and hesitation. And I'm not even like a snakeophobe, which has a real name. I don't remember what it is.
Sure. Yeah, I understand that. I don't know what the name is either, but I'm not pro snake.
I don't want them in my house.
A snake around, you know.
But if I see one in the street, I will not freak out.
No.
Oh, I saw a skunk this morning. I almost got sprayed, but that's unrelated to the snake. That's sure. just other things that I don't want in my house.
Get some snakes. Get rid of that skunk problem.
Maybe, yeah.
What do you think? You're interested in, you know...
I would definitely eat python.
Eating a python? If there's a python fast food chain that opens up over here and gets yourself some python?
I don't know that fast food is going to be the first place that I go to try my python,
Where are you going to get python?
Olive
Garden?
Yeah, I'm going to Olive Garden. No, if I'm like... In a part of the world, if I'm at a restaurant and this is like being cooked and prepared, sure. you know, yeah, I would definitely try it. Or if there was like a restaurant in this area that was like, we have this python on the mount. Yeah. That's what I did with the rattlesnake, right? I was in Colorado. I was at a restaurant. There's a rattlesnake. I'll try that.
Yeah. Yeah, you know, I can definitely be an adventurous trier of foods. Yeah. You know, not necessarily interested in incorporating into my daily habits.
Sure, but I mean, maybe you get like a python burger. It's white meat. Maybe you can do like a Chick-fil-A out of, you know, a python filet.
When Peter does see the image of animals coming down, mm-hmm. reptiles are part of that.
They are, because they're unclean.
Yeah.
And God says...
You can eat those reptiles
You
now.
Can eat it. And Peter's like,
I'm good. Pig, sure. You know, no big deal.
Bacon, I'm in. Yeah.
Snakes.
Yeah. You know. I like to imagine that it was bacon-wrapped shrimp that came down on the blanket. Okay. And God was like, here's your gift. Here's all the things that you should not be eating, but are delicious when put together.
How does the reptile enter the, you know?
I mean, they're also there. It's fine.
Sure, yeah. I've had, like, fried alligator tail.
Yeah. I've had frog.
Me too. I did not like it.
It was not my favorite thing, but I've had it.
Yeah, I tried
I guess they're technically amphibians, not a reptile.
Yes.
Hold your emails, listeners. We get it.
I tried it, and I did not think it was good. So if you're a frog-leg lover, you know, don't come at me.
Hey,
it's not good.
More frog legs for them. They don't, yeah.
Yeah. Cooked foods, I'm more adventurous. You know, slimy foods, oysters.
Not a big raw food fan.
Escargot.
Yeah.
Caviar, not interested.
So I feel like I should want to try ceviche.
Yeah,
but it freaks me out.
What's in ceviche?
Ceviche is raw fish that has it's basically been quote unquote cooked with acid, right? So it's like lime juice and all sorts of other and so like that like cooks it, but it's not cooked. And I feel like I should like want to try it, but I'm just like I don't know. It's not my thing.
Me neither.
I'm
not really a fish guy, and
not cooking it does not enhance your fishiness.
Yeah. Deep fry it. That's probably the best way for me to eat.
Deep fry that sucker. Batter it up so I can't even taste the fish.
Yeah, for real. Yeah, that's what I would want. Yeah. Batter up python, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah, there you go. Deep fried python.
Maybe, you know, like I'll try it. Yeah. All right.
Get some python fingers.
By the pound. Give me 500 pounds of python fingers.
Okay.
All right, let's jump into our main topic here.
All right.
From Christianity Today. How Not to Talk About Christian Nationalism.
Okay.
By Brad East.
It kind of sounded like you said by Braddies, but you said Brad East.
It's like Bucky's. That's right. Off-brand cousin.
Braddies.
They've got Brad space East.
Yeah, they've got junky bathrooms and it's all like leftover candy.
Yeah, python nuggets instead of beaver nuggets.
Yeah, I love it.
Yeah, Brad East.
Okay.
All right. Byline here. The phrase is increasingly useless, unfairly applied to ordinary Christians, yet too weak to sufficiently condemn another gospel in our midst.
Yeah. Okay.
We have talked about Christian nationalism in the past.
And we have come down against it, if I recall.
Still against, by the way. Have not changed.
Just in case anybody was looking for like a massive turn, yeah.
What do you think? Is this a phrase that is kind of now the boogeyman? Like, are we just using it too much?
Yeah, I think that's a reasonable question for us to consider. I don't know that my circle so much uses it too much, but I think there are a lot of places where anything in which I disagree with it, Christian nationalism. If it's associated with Christianity and I disagree with it, Christian nationalism. And
yes.
Like, Christian nationalism is a particular thing. It's not everything that I disagree with that other Christians hold to, right?
Agreed.
And, there are a lot of things, there are people who have very different understandings of hell than I do. That doesn't make them all Christian nationalists, right?
Yeah.
There are people who have a different understanding of abortion and people's right to choose, right? That does not automatically make them Christian nationalists. I do think that it's something that we kind of throw out as a label without maybe fully understanding that this is a particular thing.
Yes.
And when we use it all over the place, we're actually cheapening its effect to call out the real thing for what it is.
I'm in agreement.
All right.
100%. You know,
like, sounds like Brad East is too.
Yeah. Well, some. We'll get there.
Okay.
You got a lot to say. I think if you are a Christian in the public or political sphere,
yes,
and you talk typically on the right,
yeah,
and you talk about Christian values at all,
mm-hmm,
it's easy to get that label Christian nationalist.
Boom. Yeah.
And that's, I think, unfairly applied.
Yeah.
Now there are Christian nationalists,
yes,
in the public and political sphere,
yes,
and should be called out.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think we're cheapening it. Last week on the podcast, we kind of mentioned, like, with woke, like, it's easy, like, anything to the left of me, that's woke.
Mm-hmm.
And anything to the right of me, that's Christian nationalism. like, I'm perfectly centered.
And here I am stuck in the middle with you.
Yes. Yeah,
I think we made that joke last week,
too. We did.
But,
I bring it back.
Yeah. So good the first time.
Yeah. So, I think it's easy to kind of get there. So, we got to kind of work alongside it.
All right. So, what's Brad got to say for us?
Okay. So we've got a few ways about, here we go. Responsible opponents of Christian nationalism, those not recklessly slinging the term at everyone to the right, have legitimate concerns. I count five. Okay.
Okay. Five concerns.
Legitimate concerns. We'll go through these five and then we'll kind of go through what he kind of thinks are not big deals. So
number one, I assumed we wanted a drum roll. Was that?
Yeah.
Was this like a countdown? Like, are we going with 5, 4, 3, 2, or is this a?
This is, I don't know. His sister.
Just a list.
It's
okay.
His list. I'm not modifying it.
Okay.
First, Christian nationalism often comes with a modifier, white.
That's a concern?
Yeah. This is a responsible concern.
Okay.
Legitimate concern with kind of the ideas of Christian nationalism.
Saying that Christian nationalism isn't exclusively white, or
no,
that
like
white Christian nationalism
is white Christian nationalism is, we're just kind of, like, mostly when we talk about Christian nationalists or when people talk about that, like, we should be a Christian nationalist nation, they're kind of like implying white is attached to it.
Yes.
Yes. And part of that, the worry, not necessarily Christian or the nationalism, but the racism is definitely a big concern, right?
Yeah, that's a thing.
Implied or overt.
Yeah.
And sometimes it is both. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. All right. So that's definitely a concern I think we can have. So much race is connected to it.
Yes.
Worthy of condemnation on every level.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Racism, not race. Racism is.
Yeah. Sure. Yeah. Should be a, that's implied. But
just wanted to clarify, your sentence structure left me confused. So.
Also, any track meets or marathons.
Right. All of those. Also.
Against those races, too.
Yeah. Jeez.
Indianapolis 500, get out of here.
Well, yeah. All right.
Second, Christian nationalist opponents are rightly worried about lawlessness. Often lawlessness as typified in the Capitol riot of January 6th, 2021.
Yeah.
Which I'm not sure you need to quantify it. With the yeah. with the year.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, what January 6th are you talking about? Like, look.
This is 2017. Yeah.
All right. What
some
do we...
poor schmuck's birthday is January 6th. Yeah, that's true. Ruined forever. Yeah.
On 2021, probably. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
All right. What do you think about this concern about lawlessness connected to Christian nationalism?
Yeah. I mean, when I see what I consider to be genuine Christian nationalism, it is almost always associated with this proclamation to overthrow a particular institute or institution, right? Whether that's the government or something else that's going on, right? It's almost always violent in its rhetoric.
Yeah.
Aside from the fact that I don't think that's the vision of Jesus that we talk about when we're talking about Christianity, it's certainly alarming and concerning. And clearly, there are some who are willing to take that to an extreme, and that's what we saw on January 6th.
100%. You know, and he kind of quantifies this. Sometimes lawlessness means an unwillingness to play by the rules. Sometimes it means a refusal to accept political loss. And sometimes it means a resort to violence.
Yeah. And to be clear, like we refer to January 6th as Christian nationalists, right? Because there were people holding up Christian flags alongside like the American flag saying like, this is...
We're marching forward together.
Yeah, marching forward. Like this was not like, hey, Pastor David is deciding these people are... Like they were self-proclaiming this about themselves. It's always about themselves if they're self-proclaiming. They were self-proclaiming. Yeah.
I think oftentimes it feels like, or it sounds like when I hear people kind of speak from this Christian nationalistic point of view is rules for thee, but not for me kind of a thing. Mm-hmm. Like you are bound by the law, but I am protected by the law.
Yeah.
And those are two different things, right? Yes. Like those are, you know, I don't have to obey the rules, but I'm protected by the rules. Mm-hmm. And you... you're not protected by the rules, but you're bound to the rules.
Correct.
And I think that is attached to this kind of idea. So, you know, I definitely am against lawlessness, especially in our political discord in America.
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm really against it everywhere. But yeah, I'm with the especially. Yeah.
You know, it's also, you know, admittedly it's tough. Like historically speaking, lawlessness has led to many revolutions that I think led to better things.
Sure.
Probably. You know.
Well, and yeah.
But I'm not saying that today.
Yeah. 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 We don't need to go through all of history. I'm with you.
Yeah. Comedian Bill Burr says, hey, wouldn't you know it? Every time there are two groups conflicted and one group won, they were the good guys. 100% out of 100. 100 times out of 100. Yeah. The good guys always won. Interesting. Yeah.
The good guys do always win.
So, yeah. Every revolution that succeeded, they were the good guys. You know, interesting. Yeah. Third, what Christian nationalisms are often worried about is not nationalism per se, but conspiracy theories and fear mongering.
Yes.
Yeah.
They're also not worried about Christianity per se.
Yeah.
So we're not really worried about Christianity per se. We're not really worried about nationalism per se, but we're taking the pieces of Christianity and our patriotism that fit us or suit us, and then we're morphing them with these conspiracy theories and other unfounded concerns, and look at what we've got now. Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely hear this, you know, against Joe Biden is coming to, you know, remove religion, destroy religion in America. Like he goes to church every Sunday. I mean, like what do you, like he does not have to do that. Like it's not like the liberal left in America is like, oh, that's my guy because he's going to church. And it might even be hurting him.
Yeah.
You know, like politically. You know, like and even if let's just say this. Even if the worst fears and conspiracy theories were true.
Yes.
If we were subjugated by a political regime that made worshiping the Lord a social and legal burden or outright crime, nothing changes for the Christian.
Theoretically, yeah.
Theoretically. Like, the call, the mission, the connection to Jesus does not change.
Yeah. Now, at no point did Jesus say, go and make a Christian nation.
Correct.
Go and make disciples.
Yes.
That, theoretically, under Jesus' understanding, would have continued to live
in
a world in which following him could have put them at risk, right?
Now, I mean, you might say, like, it is no longer easy to be a Christian in my culture or in my country, and that might change. But plenty of places have outlawed Christianity only when only to find it grow on the other side. Yeah. You know, like that, you know, that you could not squash it.
Yeah.
You know, I think historically, you know, I think we've talked about this on the podcast or offline. I think only one nation has succeeded in kind of eliminating mm-hmm. Christianity kind of from its borders. And that would be Japan.
Yeah.
Everywhere else it has grown. So, yeah. You know, that is, you know, 99 times out of 100.
That's yeah.
The good guys win. Yeah. So
wait a second.
Yeah, just kidding. Not anti-Japanese or
sure.
You know,
yeah.
But I'm pro-Christianity. You know. So.
Maybe not the episode to toe that particular line.
Fair enough. Fourth, some advocates of Christian America seem to envision a kind of second-class status for non-believers.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That is very concerning for me.
Agreed.
Yeah. Because at one point, right? And when we go back in history, Christianity was the second class believer, right? And so, like, this is all about the Israelites coming out of Egypt and immediately treating other people like they were treated in Egypt. And yes. God being like, what are you doing?
Yeah.
Do you not remember anything, mm-hmm. right? And you know, God, even throughout the stories of Leviticus and Numbers, will say, like, hey, treat the foreigners and the aliens in your land with dignity. And with respect, because you were once a foreigner in Egypt, right? Like, for us to come forward now and be like, oh, we're going to make everybody else second-class citizens because we're Christian.
Yeah.
I mean, one, what's our definition of Christian? We talked about this last week, right?
Sure.
Who gets to decide that I'm a Christian? Because my bet is that these people are going to say that I'm not a Christian. Not a real one, right?
Yeah.
And so if I'm not a real Christian, well, what's the test that I have to pass? And, you know, all of these things should make us feel icky because they all come in conflict with the gospel of Jesus Christ.
100%. You know, the second class status for LGBTQ Americans, mm-hmm. second class status for religious minorities in America, mm-hmm. Second class status for atheists or agnostics mm-hmm. in America, or second class status for the wrong kind of Christian
yeah.
in America.
Yep.
You know, ironically, those, you know, I think who cry loudest that America is losing its kind of Christianhood.
Mm-hmm.
The reality is the vast majority of immigrants across the border are followers of Jesus.
Yeah.
You know, like,
yeah.
are, you know, and you'd think if you're like, hey, we really want a Christian America, you'd want more immigrants from yeah. South America because
yeah.
more likely they are Christian.
Yeah,
you know,
absolutely.
So,
yeah.
Seems a little bit at odds, you know, but, you know, that's sometimes, this is not one of his, but like, incredible hypocrisy.
Yeah.
Like anything is true based on how we're looking at it right now.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I saw a tweet by Stephen King who said kind of like
the author. Okay.
Yeah. Like the kind of the Christian nationalists are like, anything we like is true mm-hmm. and anything we don't like is false. And that's just
sure.
That's just what it is. Like, so it doesn't matter. Truth is irrelevant.
Yeah.
It's just my how I feel about it.
Yeah. My opinion is the truth.
Correct. Yeah. And fifth and finally, Christian nationalism critics are right to oppose the habit of clothing all of the above, racism, lawlessness, fear-mongering, and injustice, in the language and symbols of the faith.
Yes.
Yeah.
I'm good with all that.
I agree. And I think this is probably maybe the hardest to kind of see. Like, I think we sometimes are saying, like, from my perspective, like, I'm seeing behind the curtain, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like,
mm-hmm.
I'm seeing that this is actually racism, lawlessness, fear-mongering, and
yeah.
injustice, and you're throwing Christian language and symbolism on it
mm-hmm.
to try to, you know, swallow that pill down, right?
Yeah.
Like, let's coat it all with the Christian chocolate so we can swallow it down. And sometimes it's, like, shockingly how easy that is for
yeah.
some portions of America.
Yeah.
That, like, if they're telling you what you want to hear and they're wrapped up the Bible on top of it, they're like, sign me up.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
But, you know, again, from my perspective, he's like, that's obviously not this. Like, it's not,
yeah.
you know, the God of the Bible. So, all right. So I think, you know, if these five issues, this is from Brad,
mm-hmm.
again. If these five issues, a weak word for sinful distortions of the gospel, were all that Christian nationalism discourse concerns, I might not propose we retire the term. But this discourse also encompasses ideas that shouldn't be flagged as extreme or unworthy of engagement. Here are six beliefs and practices we ought to uncouple from the label Christian nationalist.
Okay. All right.
Okay. So I think this is fair. All right. So that is bad version of Christian nationalism. We're against. I'd like to assume most people, even Christians on the mm-hmm. right, are against.
And even say that's not in line with the gospel. Like, we can
yes.
say, like, this should not be yes. aligned with any understanding of what Jesus' teachings are. Yeah.
Okay. So now let's take this and not have it under the Christian nationalist umbrella. And okay. we'll see how we feel about these.
Okay. All right.
One, putting God in politics.
I agree. That should not be under the Christian nationalist umbrella.
Agreed.
I don't think it is inappropriate for a person of faith to talk about their faith in a political sphere.
Yes.
I might not like how somebody else talks about their political faith. I don't think that politicians' primary goal should be to foist their political or their religious beliefs mm-hmm. onto the public. But I hope and I pray that when I vote for someone that I think, hey, this person is a Christian, I hope and pray that their Christianity informs their political decision making.
Yeah. 100%. I'm with you. I think that godly men and women, Christians, should be in all aspects of American life.
Yeah.
From arts to politics. And in those aspects, you know, like I don't think like the great Christian artists aren't necessarily like only writing like songs about Jesus.
Right.
Here's a movie about Christians.
Right.
Like they're using their gift and desire to show their faith in those arenas to their best, you know, the best of their ability.
Yeah.
In the best possible terms.
Yeah.
And I think the same way. I don't think I could not be, if, you know, I would not run for a political office, but if I did and I was, you know, elected to state senate or whatever, I could not take off my Christianity at the door. It's
no.
not something that's possible.
Yeah.
It's ingrained in who I am. Now, do I want necessarily every law, every discussion, every question about politics to be like, well, let me think about that as a person of faith? I'm not necessarily sure that's true
mm-hmm.
Because not everything needs that, you know, like whether, you know, taxes, God doesn't really have a lot to say about that. Except give to Caesar what is Caesar, give to God what is God.
Sure.
You know, like, so.
I think there are ways your faith informs how we think about that. But I hear what you're
I'm
saying.
Sure,
yeah.
Like, I don't necessarily think, like, because I'm a Christian,
yeah.
I think.
I have to vote A.
A 22% yeah. tax rate is the right rate.
That's
like,
right.
or whatever.
Right. Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. or whatever it is. You know, like, I don't see that. You know, like, you know, but because I'm a Christian, responsible spending, care, a sure, nation yeah. that cares for the least of these
sure.
matter. How we do that is kind of the question. So,
yeah.
All right.
And I would say, because we're a Christian, right, and because we want to be able to have that sphere, we have to be okay with other people being in that sphere and expressing yeah. their faith. This
sure.
is maybe not tied to this connection. I just think it's a valuable yeah. point, right? Like, if I lose an election and someone of a Jewish faith or a Muslim faith or Hindu faith is elected and they're talking about their faith,
yeah,
I should be okay with that too, right?
100%. And like, yeah.
Yeah. Anyway.
And also, so clear. Every American president that's been elected has, at minimum, given lip service to Christianity.
Yep, like yep.
At minimum.
Yeah.
Putting politics into church is number two.
So we should separate, just putting politics into church is not the same as Christian nationalism.
Agree.
Also agree.
Yeah.
I think, let's clarify what I mean by that here. In the same way that our faith informs our politics, if our faith truly informs our politics, then we have to have conversations about politics in faith spheres, right? We have to be willing to say, like, okay, here's this big national issue. Mm-hmm. What does our faith say about this? How do we wrestle with this? And that doesn't mean that I need to, from the pulpit, tell my congregation how to vote on a particular issue or who yeah. to vote for. But it does mean that we need to have honest conversation about the ways in which we think of our faith in the context of a political world that we live in.
I'm in agreement.
Cool.
Yeah.
Two for two.
Yeah.
You're nailing it, Brad.
Let
yeah.
At least the first two. We'll
yeah.
see. Yeah, we'll see.
Yeah.
I'm not saying
I'm yes. waiting for the cliff to come.
I'm not saying yes or no. Maybe we like all six.
Okay.
But I'm 100% on board.
Okay.
Christianity cannot be apolitical.
No.
The early cry, Christ is Lord, is it not just yeah. a religious statement. It's a political statement.
Yeah.
And
because Caesar was Lord.
Yes.
Yeah.
And so
it would be like yelling, Christ is president.
Correct. Yeah.
Which would be weird to say today, but that's yeah. the equivalent, right?
Yeah, that is the equivalent. Yeah. yeah. It doesn't sound the same, but yeah.
yeah.
Yeah. So it is impossible to separate the church from politics.
Yeah.
And I think even, you know, faith, you know, like the Amish who are completely removed, that is a political choice.
It is.
You know, that yeah. is how they are entering the political sphere, is by removing themselves. Mm-hmm. So now, I don't think churches out there, if your pastor is telling you what political things to support or who mm-hmm. to vote mm-hmm. for, I think find yourself a new church, even if you agree. Like, even if you're like, I agree, but they're telling me who to vote for, I don't think that's legit.
Yeah.
What do you think?
I hear you. I also am aware that there's a very different tradition and thinking of this, particularly in a historically black congregation.
Sure.
And so I would just hold up that I don't really fully understand that culture and that awareness of what that impact has had throughout history. So yeah. I don't want to necessarily speak to that because I don't have enough information for it. But for the majority of mainline white churches, for sure, if that's your experience, I would be moving on, even if I agreed.
Yeah, you know,
because I just say, like,
busing to the polls after church. Yeah. It's a different kind of cultural thing.
It is. It's very different.
And it's also rooted in, like, in the South, like, they can't block all of us together.
Yeah.
Is that kind of mentality.
Yeah.
You know, so I think that I've never experienced that. So.
Right.
Yeah.
And nor are any of us experiencing that now. Right.
Yeah.
But I will say, like, what we were kind of mentioning earlier, the church is, or politics and religion are not separate. Partisanship, right, I think is where we get into trouble. I think when the church becomes partisan, that's when I get antsy. And I think that's when it starts to lean towards Christian nationalism.
Sure.
It's like, hey, to be a Christian, you have to support this party or this candidate or this issue. That's where it becomes trouble or problematic for me.
Yeah.
As opposed to, hey, your faith informs how you make decisions and you should be considering your faith in all of these things.
Sure. I can understand a church like, hey, let's talk about the issue of abortion through the lens of faith.
Yeah.
It is kind of a topic I think the church has historically and can offer weight in, but topics that like the church or scripture doesn't have as much to say. I mean, like, or sometimes the opposite, like, do you need your church to kind of write a pamphlet about gun control or even immigration? Which sometimes the Bible will say the opposite of what America is saying. And I'm not saying America is right or wrong to, have a whatever their border policy is, but the Bible has interesting things to say about that for a different nation at a different time.
Mm-hmm.
And, I think, like, again, taxes, like, I don't think the church necessarily be like 22% is the right rate.
Right.
Trust me on that one.
Yeah.
Those things, I'm not sure. That's not putting politics in the church correctly.
I hear you.
Okay. Number three.
Okay.
It's not Christian nationalism to support Christian candidates for office.
Agree.
Me too. Yeah.
I mean, like we said, every president that's ever held office in the United States has at least done lip service to Christianity.
Yeah.
That doesn't make it Christian nationalism, right? You can vote for someone because they share your faith. That doesn't make it Christian nationalism.
Yeah.
If you're voting for someone because this person is going to make sure that everybody in the nation becomes Christian or their version of Christianity, now we're in, troubling territory, but just factoring in someone's faith is not Christian nationalism.
Yeah, I mean, we have a representative democracy, so
we're
voting for people to represent.
Or something like a representative democracy.
Something like that, yeah. But we're voting for somebody to represent our area in D.C., and so that person representing my values and kind of like a snapshot of who I am, I'd want that person to be there. So if you are somebody who's saying, like, my values first and foremost is Christianity, and so I want to vote for a Christian, I don't think that's necessarily a bad thing. I would understand that mentality, just like I would understand a Muslim saying, I really would love that we have a Muslim candidate.
Yep.
They're one of ours, and we want to see them in office. But I am with you. Like, I think that this can be like, I will only vote for Christians.
Yeah, that becomes problematic.
Or anyone who's not a Christian is wrong to go to D.C.
Also becomes problematic. Yeah.
But I think the desire that I am represented by people who share my faith, I don't think is that wrong.
No. So. Yeah.
All right. Number four. Christian nationalism is not believing divine providence guides America.
We're teetering at this point, Brad. Yeah, we're teetering.
Yeah, this one is a little hairier.
It is, and not in the fun way. Like a kiwi is a little hairy, but it's still tasty on the inside. That's
I'm glad you were qualified.
That's the fun way for something to be hairy is for it to be like a kiwi.
When I think of kiwi, I'm not like, that's a fun fruit.
Well,
hey guys, you want to have some fun? Let's get some kiwis.
I didn't say it was a fun fruit. I said it was a fun hairy thing. So. If my choice is kiwi or a Sasquatch.
I know you wouldn't go with pets.
Yeah, so. I would not go with pets. That's right.
Which, trust me, hairy pets better than hairless pets.
Sure.
Hairless cats, not into it.
Snakes, hairless pet.
Not into it. Hairless dogs, into it. Not into it.
Are there hairless dogs?
Mange.
Okay. Gross. Yeah. Anyway, back to the point here. So is God divinely leading America forward? I don't have any biblical or theological evidence to support that claim. And so I think if we are saying, oh, this is God's divine plan for America, yeah, we're still leaning into Christian nationalism. And maybe we're not in like danger zone territory,
yeah,
but we're definitely like danger Will Robinson territory. Like we're coming up on it. Which does not mean that God doesn't care about what happens in America.
Yeah.
I just don't think, hey, there's one particular plan that God has laid out and it's going to involve someone returning to the throne of David and leading the United States. Like that's not the vision that has ever been laid out for the United States.
Yeah. Yeah. I think, you know, he's kind of talking like, hey, sometimes politicians will speak of America with kind of like this religious imagery kind mm-hmm. of attached to it, you know, lied to the world, city on a hill, special role.
Manifest God's, destiny, baby.
God's plan for the world. I mean, that I think is wrong, mm-hmm. but I'm not necessarily like, we got to squash that. Like that, there's bigger issues for sure. me to kind of deal with. He kind of will say, I wish fellow Christians would give up this belief. Like,
sure. Just stop it. Yeah.
He says it claims too much. It ignores the church. It overinvests in a nation that will, like all others, one day pass away.
Yeah.
But older generations and even sometimes the draw for immigration mm-hmm. is kind of this image
sure.
of a of America has God's providence attached to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so, you know, I am with him. Like, I don't love it, but I don't think that's just Christian nationalism is having that mentality or that view.
Yeah.
I would say you might not, maybe you haven't really seen much of the world, or maybe you've seen too much. I don't know. Like,
yeah. It's a fine line.
Fine line, yeah. Or like, yeah, the idea that like, there are a lot of other nations in this world. All of them, you know, many of them have elements of freedom. Mm-hmm. Many of them have elements of happiness. Mm-hmm. Many of them have elements of Christendom attached mm-hmm. to them.
Yep.
And
many of them have less Christendom and more happiness.
Yeah.
I don't know what I am.
Yeah. So like, I'm not quite as convinced as I've gotten older that America's like
the
yeah. one. You know, I think there are unique and amazing things about America. One, mm-hmm. I think, is its melting pot. And mm-hmm. I think that is the most valuable aspect of America. Mm-hmm. I can't move to China and all of a sudden I'm like, I'm Chinese. But like mm-hmm. people can move to America and say, I'm American.
Yeah.
And I think that that matters. Like that's a beautiful sure. thing.
Yeah.
But I don't necessarily, I think I'm with Brad here. Is his name Brad?
Yeah.
Yeah. I wish Christians would just give up on this claim.
Yeah.
But in and of itself, you know, I get it. You know, like it's kind of some rhetoric that the Christian church is used to.
Yeah, I don't think the rhetoric itself is problematic. I think it's the notion of God has a divine plan for America. That for me is where it's like that's leaning into something. Like just saying like, hey, America is this light of the world, city on a hill. Like that's bad use of the rhetoric, right? I'm not necessarily appalled by that. It's that leaning into that next step of, if you vote for me, we're going to lean into God's divine plan for this country. Yeah. That is troublesome.
You know, I did hear a guy speak, you know, how like God like lifted his divine protection over America. And that's why like 9/11 happened because of an embrace of LGBTQ issues.
Yeah.
And I was like, you know, God was like, hey, chattel slavery, NBD, sundown towns, whatever, Ku Klux Klan, you know, it
totally
happens.
Fine. Yeah.
You know, like, hey, we turned our hoses on like children wanting to go to school. That's fine.
Totally
but
cool.
We had on a TV show once two guys kiss and now God is like, I'm
that's
out.
That's it.
Like,
good luck.
Yeah. Like that, you know, again, I think that kind of like, you know, I think the biggest problem with, I think this idea of like divine providence guides America is an unwillingness to address America's kind of darker history.
Yeah. Our own sins. Yeah.
Just like every other nation. Mm-hmm. No other nation is perfect, but like we have to have at least the willingness to say like, that was wrong. Chattel slavery in America was wrong.
What nation do you think gets closest to perfection?
I don't know.
I'm going with Antarctica. Penguins. How bad could they be?
I guess they're not really a nation, though. So
penguins. How bad could they be?
Cool. Yeah.
The nation of penguins, run by the emperors.
I am not. I've not traveled to many places. I'll admit it. I've spent time in Peru and spent time in some Caribbean nations.
There you go.
And Mexico.
Mm-hmm.
That's about it.
Okay.
So. I don't know.
All right. I don't think any of them get that close. That's my hot take.
Maybe New Zealand. That's where Lord of the Rings was filmed.
Oh, sure. They're probably pretty good.
Yeah, that's awesome. Not a lot of people, a lot of sheep.
Yeah.
Lord of the Rings. Right. I'm on board. All right. Number five. We had two more to go through, so here, let's power through. Believing America is or should be Christian.
I would be curious what we mean by that. I don't think it's bad to desire to live in a community that shares your faith and your values. I don't think that's inherently evil or Christian nationalist. I do think it's troublesome to think that the only way for God's work to be accomplished is if everybody around me is mandated to hold on to my beliefs.
100%.
That's dangerous. Yeah, that's even beyond danger zone. That's like, okay, we're in it now. Yeah.
The call.
This one is probably feels like a slipperier slope than some of the others.
Agreed. The call of the Christian is to make disciples of all nations. And
yes.
And that includes the people who live next door to you.
Yeah.
Right. That is the call of Christendom.
I would really rather make disciples of other nations, not the people next door to me. Yeah, is that cool? Oh,
the worst.
I've got to see them again tomorrow, like it says.
Yeah. So I think the desire of the Christian is to say, like, I wish all members of my community, neighborhood, town had a relationship with Jesus, and were that was fueling their love for other, their love for the poor and marginalized, and their love for God in the midst of all that, I think is a reasonable take for every Christian to have. Saying, I want this to happen, and so I need DC to make it happen.
Yeah.
Or I need the culture to make it happen.
Yeah.
I think we're putting our faith and our trust in a man's institutions instead of God's.
Yeah.
Instead of the church or the power of the Holy Spirit. And so I think, yes, I would love for every person in America and by default the world to be a Christian.
Yeah.
I do not think we get there through legislation.
Sure.
And I think that is, you know, where I think we kind of get on that slippery slope here, number five. Yeah.
Yeah. I think that matters a lot. I think it also matters that when I tend to hear this rhetoric, it's not I want people to have a meaningful relationship with Jesus because I think it will change them and the world for better.
Yeah.
It's I'm right, so I want everybody to agree with me. And that means that means being Christian.
Yeah.
The way that I'm a Christian.
Yeah.
And usually it ends in, so if you don't like it, leave. That way everybody here will be a Christian. And I'm like, that maybe is not capturing the essence of what Jesus's message was. That's
Again, if you want more Christians in America, easiest way to do that, welcome more immigrants.
Yeah.
I hate to tell you, that's probably the easiest way to do that.
Mm-hmm.
All right. And Christian nationalism is not, number six here, doubting liberalism, democracy, or American order.
Yeah, sure. I'm with that.
Agreed. Yeah, you can doubt liberalism, democracy, and American order and have nothing to do with the faith.
You can be an anarchist. That's fine.
Yeah. Agree with you. That's not what Christian nationalism.
And
now,
you can be elsewhere on the political sphere and doubt a lot of those things too and be, you know, very Christian. Yeah.
Agreed. You know, I think when you're doing that from the Christian point of view, now we're getting into some Christian nationalism because of my faith in Jesus, liberalism is wrong.
Yeah.
Or democracy, we should not have democracy. Or American order needs to be overthrown and this sense of lawlessness. I said, yeah, I think that now we're getting, that's Christian nationalism. Like, I'm not against that. But the very fact of itself, if a Christian politician or, you know, is out there, and usually Christian politician on the right says, I do not agree with liberalism in America, that is not Christian nationalism.
Mm-hmm.
Squash liberalism in America in the name of Jesus.
Yeah.
That is now we're hitting that. Yeah. All right.
That's good stuff, Brad. Thanks.
Yeah. There you go. Those would be his ones. Yeah. Christianity Today, an interesting article. It's, you know, one of the longer ones that they kind of had. So I think it's got some meat there to kind of at least wade through, agree and disagree with. He kind of ends with kind of a, instead of Christian nationalism, you know, because things that, quoting from Paul here, another gospel at play. And that political manifestations are only symptoms of this spiritual disease. So I think that that's kind of an interesting way to say, like, okay, it's not necessarily Christian nationalism. It's another gospel happening. And this is gospel is America is the Jesus. And kind of our political aspirations or our political rhetoric are symptoms. And I think that that could be true as well. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, I think what's valuable here, right, is that Christian nationalism is still a thing.
Yes.
And is still extremely dangerous. Agreed. And should be called out by Christians in particular, yeah, for what it is.
Yes.
But there are other things that are not Christianity and not Christian nationalism, excuse me. But by calling all of it Christian nationalism, we are cheapening the thing that's really dangerous.
Yeah.
And not actually addressing these other false gospels or other gospels that are out there.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to say we're losing the argument because that makes it sound like too much of a battle, but we're not setting a clear boundary of what actually falls within the realm of,
yeah,
faith in Jesus and the teachings of Jesus.
Yeah. Yeah. When, you know, people on, you know, the left and, you know, churches that are more progressive or more mainline, when every instance of, you know, a right-leaning politician mention of Christianity, they're met with,
mm-hmm,
calls of Christian nationalism, you know, jeers of, mm-hmm, separation of church and state. I don't think it's just doing any good.
Yeah.
Like, if everything that's said about God is wrong, mm-hmm, then like we can't use that special qualification for the things that actually are really wrong.
Yeah.
You know, that are this is a major problem.
Yeah.
And a growing problem and does need to be addressed. You know, when we have people in office that are self-proclaimed Christian nationalists, that is a problem. Now, we have people in office that are self-proclaimed Christians. I don't think that's a problem. You know, so like confusing the two does not focus the magnifying glass where it should.
Mm-hmm.
It dilutes it. Yeah.
Yeah.
And that is going to be, I think, it's not going to do well for the rhetoric. Because also there's people who are Christian who are like, well, I agree with that other Christian in office, but I don't, mm-hmm, agree with the Christian nationalists. But if they're all thrown in the same boat,
yep,
I guess I'm in that boat now.
Yeah.
And like nobody wants that, you know, like, so. All right.
All right. Good stuff.
Yeah.
Well, we will be back next week with a special episode. This is an episode. It's an episode for Holy Week.
Yeah, we pre-recorded an episode because it's Holy Week and
you're busy.
You're pretty busy.
Yeah. So this episode comes out Monday of Holy Week. So yes, we should probably say, hey, happy Holy Week, everybody.
Absolutely.
If you are looking for a community in which to celebrate Holy Week, you can join Lord of Life on Thursday, Friday, Saturday, or Sunday. We're going to be worshiping every night as we move through the great 3 days and into the resurrection of Jesus on Easter morning. You can find those on our website, lolonline.org, or hopefully you have a church home near you where you can connect and move through this holiest week of weeks, as it's sometimes called, here this week.
Yeah.
And then we'll be back next Monday on Easter Monday in the light of the empty tomb.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, and if you're not in our area, in North Houston area, most of our stuff is going to be online. I don't think the Saturday stuff is.
The Saturday service is not, because our Saturday service, we do a dinner. And do you really want to like spend most of your time watching other people eat on a live stream?
No.
Yeah, that doesn't sound appealing. Yeah. So we don't.
Listening to chewing.
Ugh. Yeah. Yeah, there you go. You're welcome.
Yeah, there you go. You just got to taste it.
Yeah.
Yeah, taste.
Zing. LOLonline.org. You can find all of those things. And of course, you can find all of our previous episodes. You can go back. I think we've done whole episodes on like Holy Week and stuff.
We sure have.
You can go back and do that at beyondsundaypodcast.com.
Yep. There's probably a search feature. I don't know if there is.
Yeah, you can find it.
I'm sure. Yeah, you're smart.
Google exists.
You're smart. You can do it.
We believe in you, listener.
All right. Well, thanks for listening, everybody. We'll be back next week with more Beyond Sunday.